This is the Mason Vera Payne Show, your go-to lifestyle program, covering everything from technology and gaming to movies, TV shows, and pop culture to the supernatural and beyond. Brought to you by WGNRadio.com with your host, the unabridged millennial, Mason Vera Payne.
Mason Vera Payne here live from the MVP studios in Chicago, and thank you for tuning in. North America had three NA teams representing them at Worlds, and unfortunately, they all failed miserably. There are changes that happen to various North American teams, and joining me to explain these changes and if these mix-ups will make any difference in the upcoming season is InVin Global esports reporter Nick Geraci. Thanks for joining me, Nick.
Thanks for having me. It's good to be here.
Okay, man. I have to know, what happened to Cloud9? I think the whole team imploded here, and everybody went everywhere. What happened here?
It's hard to know entirely what's going on, especially because things haven't completely unfolded. But for the most part, I mean, we've seen Evil Geniuses has officially confirmed their acquisition of Defense Garen and Zazel. And actually, they about 30 minutes ago confirmed that Kumo would also be starting for them. Definitely is allegedly part of the deal too, but they haven't actually confirmed him yet. That could mean that, you know, he has been signed by them, but they're just looking to sell him, so they haven't announced anything. Or it could also mean that he ended up not being part of the deal as originally reported. In a short version, it looks like Cloud9 to me believes in some of the young core they have, but wants to change some of the pieces around them, and primarily the culture. It's always been a very laid-back culture at Cloud9, and we may be seeing a shift from that.
What happened with Sneaky? Because he's not playing pro, so he's just pro streamer at this point for Cloud9?
The situation is exactly as follows. This is an official statement by CEO of Cloud9, Jag Etienne. Basically, Sneaky right now, confirmed Cloud9 has signed Sven. Sneaky is weighing his options right now, basically. Those options being either playing professionally with Cloud9, in which he would be competing for the starting spot, so to speak, with Sven, or becoming a streamer for Cloud9 and retiring. Whatever his future may be, it's either staying with Cloud9 as a player, retiring with Cloud9, retiring on his own, or trying to play in the LCS somewhere else. And the reason why there hasn't been much definitive visibility on that is because Cloud9 is respecting Sneaky's wish, which is to kind of just let him figure out what he wants to do before anything is said or done. It's going to be interesting to see what happens, but right now we don't really know what his future holds. I think that he could be a very successful, he already is a very successful streamer. He's got the cosplayer thing going, which he's become, started out as kind of like a joke gimmick. He's now incredibly good at it. He's a bona fide, very good cosplayer. And I think that, you know, whatever he ends up deciding, he has plenty left in the tank. I think that his decline, quote-unquote, this year was greatly exaggerated, and also there were other contributing factors out of his control. He did drop the ball in certain aspects, and it was his worst season. But if your worst season is qualifying for the World Championship for the seventh year in a row of your seven-year career, I think you're doing all right.
Why didn't they play Sven Skarin at Worlds? I never really understood that.
That was something that was peculiar to a lot of people, myself included. You know, I mean, he's been very good for most of his time in Cloud9. He can have incredible world performances. He really has that, extra gear where, I'm not just good in NA. If I'm in good form, I can be the best jungler in the world. You know, he does have that gear. What I think happened, we saw Sven Skarin play two games. He won one and he lost one, and he didn't look very good in either of them. We also saw the jungle meta shift massively between the last time. Remember, Cloud9 had a very long break because they weren't in the gauntlet, right? They qualified for Worlds before the finals even started, and that was August, 19th. So they had a long time of not playing, and the jungle meta, jungle was still played very early game focused, but, you know, at Worlds, we saw Lee Sin, Rek'Sai, Elise, and not that these are champions that Sven Skarin hasn't historically been able to play, but a lot of his best work in summer was on the likes of Sejuani driving these tank picks, and I think that they liked how Blabber looked. I don't know if it was scrims or whatever happened, but I think that Blabber got more starts than Sven Skarin because he was the better jungler on form, and frankly, in the games that he played, he did look better. He looked better on his own champions, and he also played Elise and played a better Elise than Sven Skarin, and yeah, he's still very, you know, young, imperfect player right now, obviously. Sven Skarin is still the better jungler of the two, but Blabber showed a lot of impressive stuff at Worlds. He really, really had a great game against Jankos and G2, and also Tarzan, completely out-jungled both of them. They're considered the two best junglers in the world coming into Worlds they were. I don't know the exact reason why Sven Skarin didn't get a lot of games, but I do understand and think that Blabber did his part. I think he was one of the few members on Cloud9 that did perform well at the World Championship, along with Licorice, and I think that that's what Cloud9 is doing there. Rebuilding the rest of the team around Licorice and Blabber and what they want to do.
Okay, so my thing is usually when it comes to other sports like NBA, NFL, when you have to just implode the team and get rid of players, if this doesn't work, at what point are they going to start looking at the coach? Because usually it's the coach's fault for not being able to control their players or not being able to make sure their players are going in the right direction. And it's also the coach sets the tone. So that laid-back attitude, that's the coach's fault. Do you think that they're going to look at Reaper soon?
I think that there's an argument for that. I think that Reaper is extremely well thought of, and I do think that he is a fantastic coaching mind when it comes to like the game and everything. But even with Cloud9 doing better than other North American teams internationally, they haven't won a title since Reaper came over. They've been in the finals three or four times, and they've lost every time. They haven't won a LCS title in over 5 years now. And so if that's a priority for them, I could see them making a change. At the same time, what this tells me is that the culture change is part, like, partially something that Reaper was, like, on board with. Because Reaper, the way he coaches, he obviously understands the traditional, like, style of Korean coaching. He's coached in Korea. He's played in Korea. He's coached in China, right? But he also knows, he's like, you want to be able to get around, like, you want to be able to get the best out of your players. And Cloud9's roster was, like, very, like, laid back. Like, he's a laid back guy. That doesn't mean that he doesn't try hard. It doesn't mean that he doesn't care about his pro career, but he's, you know, he's very good with the flow. And Cloud9 has overall kind of had this sort of chill kind of culture. And I think that it might be like that the younger players, like Christian Blaber, who do have a lot of potential, might want to, you know, change that around. You know, maybe they, like, you know, Sneaky even said on his stream that he felt like a lot of his teammates didn't want to play with him, like, stylistically, you know? It's a very complex situation, but I would say that, yeah, I mean, at some point, you do have to hold the coach accountable. I just think it's hard to say with Reaper because of how much of a unicorn he is in the North American coaching scene for League of Legends.
Yeah, speaking of Twitch and Sneaky, he also said that he was offered to compete for his spot. Is that a...
Yes.
He gave up on his spot, kind of? It seemed like that to me, like he didn't want to even try to get his spot back because he felt, I deserve it and I should be here. Or was that the wrong way to take it?
That's part of it. I can say for certain that I know that Sneaky feels that he's been overcriticized this year. And I think that he may have expected, after being with Cloud9 this whole time, surviving on the starting roster through multiple iterations, in multiple roles. You know, over the years, he's been the hard carry. He's been more of like a siege poke guy. He's been the low econ guy that he was this year, where he pretty much did nothing while they played around Licorice. He's done so many different things for the team. I think he just maybe expected more benefit of the doubt. And I would also say that it'd be one thing if it was a super, super good AD carry, but Zen and Sneaky were pretty comparable in 2019, in my opinion, to be inferring. I don't think he felt like he should have to compete for this spot, but he also said on that stream that stylistically he felt like his teammates didn't like playing with him. You know, like he felt like it wasn't like... So I also get like, regardless of anything else, if someone didn't want to play with me, like I wouldn't want to force them to play with me. You know what I mean? So if that's the case, like he said it was, then that makes a lot of sense to me. But again, nothing's been set in stone. Last we heard that from Jack, the CEO, is that Sneaky is weighing his options, and we'll have to see what he decides is best for him.
You know, this kind of reminds me a little bit of Overwatch, where a lot of the pro players decided, like, man, I don't want to be pro anymore. I'm going back to streaming because I don't have to follow rules. I don't have to play with people. I don't have to deal with other people's personalities. And I could just make money doing this. And, you know, when it comes to Sneaky, I think he's a great player. But I think he kind of doesn't have the heart to play with other people right now. He probably should just decompress and just stream for a bit and then come back fresh. But that's me.
No, I mean, that's the thing, right? It's like, I totally respect when an Overwatch player is burnt out and wants to stream instead. But also, like, think of that situation for Sneaky, but he's been playing the game for 7 years. He's been the only starting member of Cloud9 for seven seasons. All seven of those seasons, he has appeared at the World Championship. Like, if he retired in the next 5 minutes, he'd hang it up and have nothing to be ashamed of, in my opinion. You know? So, I think it is just a matter of if it's harder than it, because if not, he has a very, very popular stream presence. He clearly enjoys streaming and engaging with his audience. Like I said, his cosplay thing, the whole new aspect of his brand, and I think that, you know, like I said, I do really think that he could still, if he wants to, he can still be one of the best AD carries in North America, absolutely. But I also think that if he just wants to move on to a new chapter of his life, he's more than set up to do that.
Now, I'm a little curious about this, because I like sports, and I'm curious if they do this in esports. I know, like, in the NFL, if a guy is still in his prime, but they know that, hey, he's 35 years old, he's not going to last that much longer, they'll trade him, even though he has good stats. Do they do that in esports? They'll sit there and say, man, Sneaky has 5 more years in LOL. Let's trade him before, you know, he loses any of his, you know, his abilities.
I think you'll see specific context of that. I think it's less common, but will become more common as salaries continue to grow, right? People were very, like, curious around, you know, Blabber over Sven's Garen in terms of fun and picking him. And I'm like, don't, like I said, don't look at the levels of those two junglers right now. What you should look at is that Sven's Garen is coming off of an MVP caliber split. He is a veteran player. He is qualified for the World Championship across two regions and three teams. He absolutely 100% was more expensive than Blabber, who was drafted out of the scouting grounds by Cloud9 2 years ago. Blabber is absolutely a cheaper player. He has more room to grow. Also, if Cloud9 extends him now before he gets really good and expensive, then like they can get him for a bunch of team-friendly controlled years, which they already probably have, given that they signed him at scouting grounds. They have developed this player from the ground up, and it makes sense that they're giving him a full chance to start. So I think that, yes, you do see it. It's less about getting rid of someone before they're bad, more about maybe giving someone else a chance who could be as good, who's maybe not as expensive, or just a different fixture in the team. You know what I mean? Like, it's often in esports more about the new person coming in than the old person going out.
I have to find out, what do you think about this? Bjergsen co-owning TSM. Do you think there's going to be a bit of conflict of interest here?
I think that in a vacuum, no. Right? Because, you know, equity deals, co-ownership from players is not something that violates any laws in California or anything like that. But I think it's very apparent with, like, kind of the sort of fumbled rolling out of the rule and sort of everything else in the recent report about Cloud9, basically having already paid their players equity for a while. ESPN report that basically they had already had equity in their contracts, but there wasn't really an established rule, but it was basically not disclosed per Riot standards. So it's kind of like in a vacuum, you know, like the rule's fine. I think it's fine now, but the circumstances in which it was established and how could definitely have been handled better, in my opinion.
Do you think this is his way of trying to transition to a more background role for TSM? Because I can't imagine he'll still be in the forefront.
No, I don't think so. I think that this is weird to knowing how much his brand is tied to TSM at this point. You know, like they are very synonymous. He's been the starting mid laner for, this will be his sixth year starting on TSM. He's pretty much become the face of the organization, at least in like the global scene. He has an agent, and he also understands that TSM is a very, very valuable brand. They have a great Fortnite presence. They have a lot of other competitive teams in esports right now. They were evaluated by Forbes as the second most valuable esports brand of the year, just behind Cloud9 by just a little bit. And that's even with Team Liquid, like G2 Esports, winning everything. So I think that should tell you about TSM's future as an org as a whole, and also Bjergsen's potential understanding of, hey, like, what's here for me after this? And if I'm going to continue to help make this brand grow and define our entire era as a League of Legends team, I might as well get something out of the empire I'm building. And I totally agree with it.
All this leads up to my most important question. Our performance at Worlds was embarrassing.
Yes.
This upcoming season, what could we do to get better?
Honestly, there are things that we can do. And so far, it seems that teams have done nothing but the opposite. And that's what's concerning for me. And right now, for example, Pobelter, long-established mid laner in the LCS, hasn't always been the best international performer, but has won several domestic titles, has been, you know, he's a veteran, been around for a long time. He announced he's not going to be playing in the LCS this year. Demonte, who just, you know, went to Worlds with Clutch Gaming / Dignitas, is also without a team as of right now. And so it's confusing to me that we talk about how North America needs to focus on developing its own talent and building on North American players, and we're leaving our two best, like, domestic mid laners, like, ever. Like, after Hyze retired, these are the two guys that we've had who we've actually been able to develop into competent mid laners, right? It's the worst role for development in North America, which is already just a bad place for development relative to the rest of the world. So I don't understand how those guys are not getting offers, even if they've been playing for, like, you know, Pobelter's been playing for 5 years, fine. Maybe you've seen enough and you're done with him. Demonte started his LCS career, like, 2 years ago. He has plenty of room to grow. He's not perfect at all. But he understands that the team he's playing on is a system that goes past more than him. He's incredibly good attitude. He's very, very well brandable in North America. And, you know, on top of everything else, like, he plays the style that's good for mid lane in the meta. He's very good at roaming, following his jungler, playing to his side lanes. You know, he's a very, very self-aware player. And I just cannot believe someone wouldn't pick him up. That's truly, like, the most shocking thing of the offseason for me. Kind of my problem is that we all said, oh, well, North American talent isn't that, you know, we need to be better about it. And then, you know, no one really kept a draft pick from scouting grounds this year. And people just keep importing players. And so it's kind of like, I do understand the short term that teams have to be competitive, but also I don't see any teams making any of the changes to the stride thing that have to be made to get to that point. So it's hard for me to have faith in that. I would say right now that we have a few rosters in NA, if all these confirmed rosters go through. Most of them are official, but some of them are still just reports. We have maybe two teams who could be as good or better than last year. But, like, overall, I think the league is even weaker. I think this is mostly a roster shuffling of relative weakness, and I hope that I'm wrong, but I think that the offseason, while the individual player moves are exciting, and it's always nice to see players get a good contract from a good organization, I would say the overall competition of the teams, if anything, will be worse next year internationally than this year.
Man, I am so glad you talked about Bo Belter, because what's the import rule, and is the import culture ruining our teams?
Quick basics on the import rule. Basically, a North American LCS team must field 60% of a domestic roster at all times. That means that three out of the five players starting on a team must be North American residents. That basically stops teams or organizations from just importing a full team of players from Korea or China or something like that. And it's designed to help foster the talent of the region, but because of NA's historical problems with player development, Bo Belter's mentioned import culture. It's kind of become that it's almost default assumed that, like, well, we know that this North American player has this type of ceiling. He's a known commodity. And rather than get a new player from North America, like a younger guy, we'll just import an unknown. And the idea is that I think Bo Belter is railing against the idea that by default, an unproven import will always be trusted over a known commodity North American player. Even if that player does have strength, if he is known for his strengths, his weaknesses, whatever else, then more often than not, teams will go the other way. They'll find somebody from Europe. They'll find somebody from Korea or even China. And I think that while on one hand, North America does have a player development problem, and there is like a problem with our player base being relatively small compared to our total population, there's also something to be said for we're clearly like doing nothing to showcase that these teams believe in North American talent, right? Like Demonte went to Worlds last year as a North American-born mid laner, one of the few who actually has, and is completely teamless. It's just very, very problematic in the sense that you basically just have teams putting two imports on a squad and then trying to fill out the roster with whatever North American talent they can muster. And rather than, you know, a team like G2 having five European players, Fnatic, five European players, Splice, five European players, all three of those European rosters got top 8 at Worlds. So it's not that there isn't a player development problem, but I think Bo Belter is saying that there's also a stigma in addition to that where people are just written off completely. Scouting isn't happening. Things are kind of taken at face value on hearsay. The player like, oh, no, that guy isn't playing well. And then boom, that's it. No tryout, nothing. You know, I think that there just needs to be a more thorough process scouting, and that will then lead to a more thorough process of developing, because the better we get at scouting, the more we'll know what to look for. And so it's a compounding problem, but we're seeing it kind of at the top level, and we were hoping that franchising would solve some of this, and it looks like it's only complicated it.
I don't think any franchise could solve it, personally. I think Riot is going to have to be the one to step in, because when it comes to our player base in NA, it's small. So even the people who are trash can get pretty high if you compare it to people in other regions like Europe and Korea. I think the problem is, and you know, it's something Bo Belter had said, was that he doesn't even think he's reached his ceiling yet. Like, he hasn't hit it yet. And a lot of that is because who are you competing against? If you're competing against people who are high level here but low level somewhere else, I mean, that's your ceiling, is low level. How can you get better if all you can compete against are people who aren't even hitting their own ceiling? And I'm not sure how to fix that. I mean, that would be, where would you even start? Because that's the player base. It's not necessarily the, even the league, you know?
Right. I'm glad you brought that up, because that's what I'm saying. There are certain parts of this that Riot doesn't really have control over, which is that we have a much smaller player base for the overall population we have. Like, our player base is more comparable to Vietnam, but our population dwarfing theirs than it is to Europe, who we also have more population than Western Europe. The Western European server has more players and more elite players playing ranked, trying to climb the ladder, and that's also it. It's also somewhat cultural at the top in terms of quality. A lot of the top players in North America are retired pros, streamers, one-trick entertainment streamers, you know, like, and no judgment to them, no disrespect, but when the majority of your top players aren't other players trying to go pro, trying to kind of, you know, become the best player objectively they can be at the competitive level in a professional context, like, that's going to affect it. And then we even see that on the team level. Team Liquid's won 4 LCS splits in their own, can't get out of groups of Worlds because no team is challenging them to get better enough. So yeah, they just signed Broxah in place of Big Smithy, who's objectively a better jungler, but who knows if that will win. Stylist definitely mesh well, and even if it does, will the team be challenged enough by the rest of the domestic competition to grow where it'll even matter? I'm not so sure.
And you have to remember another thing. It's a huge American culture to build super teams based off of how much money you have. Think of the LA Lakers. You have LeBron James and AD. Boom. You have yourself a super team, and they're willing to pay more people to come to their team so that they can blow out the NBA league, you know? And that is 100% American. If we got rid of the import rule, you're right. We're going to have so many Koreans on our teams because we're willing to pay $1 million, $2 million for each player. Because why not? You know, we want to see people win.
It sounds crazy, but it's like, if there was no import rule, like, okay, I'm just going to buy, like, okay, SKT has a partnership with T1 Esports and Comcast. What would stop them from moving SKT to the LCS and destroying everyone, right? Like, that's kind of what that feature or that scenario would look like. But at the same time, it's not necessarily, like, a good fix, because then you still have teams to be like, okay, I'm just going to get, like, the two best Korean players I can, and then just, like, hope that my NA talent doesn't feed as much. Like, even if that's, there have been teams that like that. There have been teams that have been carried by their two Korean imports. They exist, we all know about them, but to now expect that as the default is doing a disservice to the potential development of North American players, which, as we've already talked about, is in scarce quantity relative to the rest of the world.
And then you have to think the language barrier, too. I mean, not a lot of people, I know I don't know another language, and if I sat there and tried to speak Korean, I'm going to embarrass myself and frustrate my fellow player.
The North American teams who went to Worlds last year, right? Like, looking at Team Liquid, yeah, Jensen's an import, but he's a European. He can speak English. He's been here for years. And he's actually now granted residency. He doesn't even count as an import. But so that's like that. He's very familiar with everything. Impact is the same way. His English, he has a thick accent, but his English is very good. He's very competent. Core JJ has lived here before. His English is fantastic. You know, and then Cloud9. Cloud9 had no Korean player, right? They had two Europeans and three North Americans. You do see that, like, the best teams are still getting, like, it does matter about the domestic talent. And, like, we already mentioned the three LEC teams, all 15 European-born and bred players. So I think that people realize that the language barrier is an issue. That's still not stopping people. And that's part of that is that we just, like, our overall talent pool isn't as good, and we see every year we see new mid laners or new talent in general come up, like in Europe, like Humanoid, Splice, like he's a rookie, and boom, all of a sudden he's at Worlds, right? Nemesis, who replaced Caps, like, yeah, he's not Caps, but he's pretty good, and he did well at Worlds. He's like 18 years old, you know, like those guys came out of nowhere. When was the last time that we had like a phenom player like at that level developed, right? And I think the closest thing, I mean, yes, we've had Licorice. But he's been kind of in the challenger scene for a while, and the closest thing we have to something that's been kind of new is Blabber, which is why I'm glad he's getting a chance to start, because in limited starts, he's shown that he can perform at that top level. And I like that Cloud9 is taking the risk of, like, well, let's spin Saren go, and it's your spot, it's your team, now you make it happen. That's the type of, like, philosophical change that needs to happen in North America, even if this doesn't work isolated. I hope it does. But the same people railing against Cloud9 for letting Sven Saren go are the same people saying that there's a problem with, like, believing in North American talent. I'm like, you can't have your cake and eat it, too. You know, so it has to be push come shove one way or the other. And I'm glad Cloud9 is willing to take risks. They've historically only been the only organization to take risks. And look at that. They've been the best organization internationally. So I think that they might be onto something, and we should all take a page out of their book and maybe even go a little further with it.
So wait, after everything that we've talked about here, do you think ending the rule, the import rule, would make North America a more competitive region?
Yes, but I think that for that to really work is you have to eliminate the import rule and either have a fully global league, like Overwatch League, or you have like just an open circuit where you're not having a regular structured season. And while that might be fun to see players in different orgs, different regions and different like forms of competition in that way, there's something to be said for the seasonal setup that's set up right now that is very, very good for player career stability. And so, no, I don't think we'll see it. I don't think we'll see it happen in that way. I can see them changing it again. I mean, they already did before. It was, you know, before we had, you have to be here for 2 years, and then you're considered a North American resident. A few people were grandfathered in, and then they realized that that was not going to work, and so they extended it to 4 years, and now we've seen them add a new version, which you can now import an additional minor region player that doesn't count, basically. So we're seeing, you know, rumors of Ryoma, who's a mid laner from Oceania, going to 100 Thieves. I think that's great that the other minor regions are getting, their talent is getting a chance to show themselves in a major region, but it seems to me that we're like just kind of moving on to a different problem. It's like, oh, cool, we can have more imports that we can develop. So now we can get Oceanic players for cheap and develop them because they're inherently better than North American players, I guess, for some reason, right? So it's such a complex issue because we don't necessarily seem to have a solution, but I don't really feel like we're looking for one either.
Okay, so I think I came up with a solution for this because it's been bothering me, the import rule, because I think it's a great idea. But we don't have any place to practice. Why doesn't Riot just make a global server? And that way, solo queue, you can at least pair up with some Koreans or Europeans. And then, you know, you could reach maybe your apex and be like, oh, this is how you play harder and faster and smarter. Because you're playing with other players that are harder, faster, and smarter.
Yeah, I mean, if you've ever tried to play a game on, like, EU West from the States, you know the thing is terrible. And so, like, for that to, like, work, I think Riot would have to have, like a server in every, like, maybe every, like, couple hundred miles, in all honesty. Because we're even seeing that, like, we're even seeing pros in L.A., because that's where LTS is out here. They're like, you know, it sucks at the servers in Chicago, because our ping is, like, 60, and 60 is not bad to an average player like you and me. But when pro players in Seoul or Shanghai or Berlin are playing on 10 to 15 ping, that does make a difference.
Yeah, ping is a huge thing for anybody who thinks it's not. That can go from, you know, seconds mean something, and milliseconds too.
Especially at the top level. It's all, you know, centimeters.
Well, Nick, thank you so much for joining me. For those listening, where can they find more information about you?
No problem. Thank you for having me. Really enjoyed this discussion. You can follow me on Twitter, just at Nick Geraci, or if you want to head over to InventGlobal.com, me and my other colleagues write a lot about League of Legends, but other esports too. And other just general gaming news as well. Anyone can hit me up anytime to talk about gaming or esports. Thanks again for listening if you made it this far.
This has been the Mason Vera Payne Show. Thanks for listening. Can't wait to hear more? Subscribe, rate, and comment at masonverapayne.com. That's MasonVeraPaine.com. Also, follow Mason on Facebook and Twitter at Mason Vera Payne. That's all one word. And don't forget to share the show with your friends.